This is the West Texas Dispatch. I'm George Levesque. Texans are about to start heading to the polls. But this year, most of the votes will not have candidates on their ballots. Instead, they will be deciding 17 proposed amendments to the state constitution. In Abilene, some voters are also going to determine the tax rate that will determine funding for maintenance and operations at Abilene ISD. We're asking our regular contributor on state and local politics, Paul Fabrizio, to help explain this year's election, and he does that so well. Paul, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate your asking me.
Let's start with the big one, at least locally, in Abilene. Let's start with the Abilene School District tax rate proposal. They're hoping to raise $3 million. There's a change in the tax rate. And frankly, Paul, it's a little bit complicated because you're voting to raise the rate, but it might not raise your taxes, right?
Right. Because what we have developed here in the state of Texas is a system where there's a tax rate and it's determined by assessments of your value, but it depends also on who you are and the circumstances of your life. So the elderly get breaks. The disabled get breaks. There's a potential for those to be extended. There's potential for spouses of veterans to get extensions. So it really depends on what categories you fit in that whether this will really raise your taxes or not. So overall, it's going to raise the tax rate. But you might not have to pay it.
Why does AISD need this money? Do we know?
Unfortunately, I don't know the answer to that. They are making improvements, I assume, security, that sort of stuff. But I just don't know.
We're going to cut that one because
yes.
I just threw him under the bus on that one.
I just don't know. And I apologize.
No worries.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Proposition 1 affects TSTC. There is a slate to ask voters to approve a permanent fund to support the college and their capital needs. And, of course, they've got campuses all around West Texas. What's this?
Well, what it is that over the last couple of years, the state legislature has basically created an endowment for some of the major research universities. So Texas Tech had an endowment created by the voters in the last election 2 years ago. So the thinking was, well, we're doing that for the research universities and their systems. Why aren't we doing it for people who are looking for, you know, an ordinary job? Like you want to learn about plumbing, you go to TSTC for it. So why don't we create an endowment for them too? So this is an effort to give them, I'm not going to use the word parity, but to give them basically a source of money that they will have that they can count on for infrastructure improvement, course improvements, pay salaries, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure what all the money will go for. But it's to give them a solid financial base. Now, the thing is, if you do that, you're going to make them less dependent on regular state funding, which means the state legislature will have less control over TSTC. So what do you want in terms of control over higher education? Do you want them to have this independent source or do you not? The independent source would be good for them, but the consequence of that means that the legislature would have less control over TSTC.
Proposition 2 eliminates capital gains taxes. Well, kind of. I mean, the state doesn't have capital gains taxes. There's a couple of situations where this is in here. Let's eliminate something that doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. And what it is that I think sometimes as people in the state legislature look around and they go, what is the potential problem? So it turns out that the state of Washington had eliminated income taxes, but then put in capital gains taxes. So to prevent that from happening here, this is in our ballot.
That's a very good explanation.
Okay.
All right. You and I talked about one of the big things that happened a few months ago was the establishment of the Texas Water Fund.
Yes.
Can you explain what that vote is for and how that would affect us?
Okay. Well, what it is there's a report. It's called the Texas 2036 report. So in other words, our 200th anniversary. The state is going to need $154 billion for water infrastructure over the next 50 years. Where are we going to get that money? Okay. So this is an effort to establish a fund that will be devoted strictly for water and water infrastructure needs. And it's just going to get us started. And you're going to have to add to it. We're going to have to spend more and more money. What they're talking about right now is they estimate there is a need for $74 billion for leaky pipes that currently exist in the state of Texas. And it's like, we're going to have to take care of that.
Yeah.
How much money are we – how much water are we losing? And here we are in a drought because of leaky pipes. So we need to upgrade our infrastructure, and this is a way to do it. Now, remember, anything that goes on the ballot has passed with two-thirds of both houses mm-hmm. of the Texas legislature. So this is something that I think most people think is a really good idea.
Next time you hear about a water main break in your city.
Which Abilene just had one a couple days ago, I believe.
Absolutely. Well, and I know we had one a couple months ago, and we were talking to the water people where I work, mm-hmm. and they said there were five that weekend. It is an ongoing issue.
Yeah.
This is aging infrastructure. They go down, dig that pipe, and it had a date on there of 1927.
Oh, my Lord.
So, again, and that's what happens when things get to be that old, almost 100 years old.
You've got to keep your infrastructure up. And the problem is, for a politician, it's not sexy.
No.
Okay? It's really boring, and people get angry. Why are you spending so much money on leaky pipes? Why didn't you fix them 20 years ago? You know, just like the issues City of Abilene's had with the streets.
Right.
But it has to be done. It has to be done constantly. And the thinking is that this will set up a fund that at least can allow for more money to go towards water.
Propositions 5 through 11, they deal with tax questions, some technical language in these ballot items. Is there anything that stood out when you looked at those 5 through 11 that we need to talk about for sure?
The one that I think is really interesting is number 9, which is going to add how much you can exempt from your business. Now, under current law, Texas businesses don't have to pay taxes on property that's worth $2,500 or less,
mm-hmm.
okay? What this is going to do is it's going to exempt business inventory or equipment up to $125,000. So that's a pretty big jump in what is going to be exempt from these taxes. So that's all part of Proposition number 9. And what's going to happen is it's going to cost the state of Texas $193 billion is what their estimate. I'm sorry, $193 million if we do this.
Right.
Because it's going to take money out of local hands, and the state is pledging to make up for it by giving those local school districts that money that they lose with these exemptions. So instead of money coming from property taxes, it's going to come from the state coffers. And we'll see how that all works.
I think it's important to note over this whole discussion that the state has had surpluses oftentimes in the last few years.
Yes, but anybody with the memory goes back to several years ago when we didn't
have
surpluses. Well,
that's true. Yeah, yeah.
So we've been blessed, and I think the legislature was infected with that and said we need to keep giving breaks. But what happens when we are not in a surplus situation? I think our current surplus was like $51 billion this mm-hmm. year, and that's a lot of money. But will that be there next year, the year after? You know, some people are talking about, you know, there's a recession coming. Well, if there's a recession, that's going to affect tax revenues. It's going to affect what's going on in the state.
Yeah.
So how much do you want to give to businesses to allow them to continue to operate? How much of a tax break do you want to give? By the way, the other thing about this, you do this, and if you limit how much you can tax businesses, where is a school district going to get their money? Where is a city or a county going to get their money? Well, they're going to be looking at other taxpayers, meaning homeowners.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a potential that local taxing authorities will say, well, we can't get it from the businesses, so maybe we need to raise the rates on homeowners. So we need to be careful with this shifting of tax burdens. Where does it belong?
Question 15 affirms that parents are the decision makers for their children. What's going on with this one? Why is it on there, and what does this mean?
there's a movement right now across the country called parental rights. And it's just to say parents have rights. This is a really tricky thing because this amendment doesn't do anything to change current state law.
Oh, gotcha.
It doesn't change the state's responsibility, doesn't change parents' responsibility, doesn't change schools' responsibility towards kids.
And 16 is pretty much the same thing. It clarifies that voters must be U.S. citizens, which is already
the law.
Right.
And what that is that's an attempt to prevent a school district or a county or something like that from saying, okay, we're going to allow non-citizens to vote only in a local election, okay, which they have the right to do. You know, somebody's in the state legislature thought this was important, and two-thirds of the legislature agreed.
And it will be on your ballot. Paul Fabrizio, thank you for joining us and clearing up some of the amendments on the ballot. I see your face. It's hard to clear up too much, right?
It's hard to clear up too much. These when you get to them, some of them are pretty complicated.
Yeah.
But they're things that the legislature is asking us to vote on. So please, everybody, go vote.
There you go. Paul Fabrizio, professor of political science at McMurray University. By the way, there is more information on all of these initiatives, including who supports them, why people are opposing them. You can find it on the website ballotpedia.org. Early voting begins Monday, October 20th, by the way. And you can check out our social media site at KACU895 for a list of locations and operating times. Today, Alexis Jones sits down with Jeff Fuzzy Smith and Chris Cummings from Steps Recovery Centers. Jeff brings lived experience and peer support expertise, while Chris leads operations focused on effective care. Together, they'll discuss leadership, recovery, and the impact of community in healing.
So, Jeff, you can probably take this question. Tell me how we got started.
Well, in recovery, I was an addict. I was I invested 30 years into drug addiction. And functioning drug addict. I mean, I ran a business, but drug addict, alcoholic, all the things. And I stayed at one of my marriages. And so I stayed single for 19 years and got remarried. And whenever I did, and about 2 years into that marriage, I seen the wheels falling off the bus with that, so I knew I needed to get into recovery. Mm-hmm. And so, serious recovery. And so I did, and I got into a Christ-centered recovery program, and it made the difference, and I got clean from drugs and alcohol, and the Lord started revealing a lot of other character defects that I really had no idea that I shouldn't say I don't have it, didn't have any idea. I really didn't care that I had. And so I've been in recovery ever since. And that's been 18 years. This March will be 18 years that I've been working on trying to get my life in order and be the man that God created me to be. So that's how it all started with me.
Good. How did the program get started?
Okay. I was on staff at Beltway Park for almost 9 years. As a pastor, an outreach pastor there at Beltway Park, running a ministry called Boots on the Ground. And actually, we had the ministry ran for like 12 years, but it ran for several years before taking it under the umbrella of Beltway Park. And Beltway had a recovery program. That's where I got clean, was a Celebrate Recovery there at Beltway years ago. And about 6 years into my recovery, it ended there at Beltway. And so me coming on staff, when I came on staff, I really knew, I mean, I was meeting with a lot of men and women that were looking for recovery. People knew my past. I'm pretty transparent about it. And so I was meeting with a lot of people that were struggling with addictions, and mostly drug and alcohol. But so I really wanted to try to get another recovery program started at Beltway, and the door just never would open for that. And in 2022, the Lord was really revealing to me some things about, I mean, he's really putting it heavy on my heart that he wanted to get something started. And so I talked to the pastor, and the pastor told me to put together a proposal, you know, of what it would look like and have that turned in by October of 2022. And I just could never get it to – it just never rolled out onto paper. I just could never get it, could never – and really I thought I was asking the Lord, you know, for direction, but I, looking back, I really wasn't. I was just looking – shooting from the hip trying to figure out how to do it. And one night the Lord revealed to me, he said, well, is what you're doing – this is your proposal, it's not mine. And so he showed me that the proposal that he had was to get it outside the four walls of the church, Christ-centered, biblically based, but outside the four walls of the church. And so I really didn't see no way possible for that. And I had some friends that we had been bouncing around and talking about it, and I told them what the Lord had revealed. And so we found some funding for it. So we did it. I put in a one-year notice at Beltway, and we ran a pilot group, and it's a program called Regeneration.
So walk me through what the program looks like. Like, what do people undergo?
Okay. It's very – all of our teachings are biblically based, and it's all Christ-centered. And anything that we teach in the program or that's in the material is strictly – back biblically. So when you come, say if you came to the program, it's non-issue specific. It's not just drugs and alcohol. It's not just drugs, alcohol, and pornography. We recognize 127 different types of addictions, compulsive behaviors, issues, struggles, whatever you want to call them. But they become addictions, you know, sinful behaviors. But nevertheless, when you come, the first time you come, you will. We start out with worship. It's at 6:30 on Mondays and Fridays. You would come either a Monday or a Friday. We all have worship together, and then we'll have a large group lesson, and the lesson is usually based on one of the steps of the 12 steps or something like that. So you come right out of the gate. If you come, you'll get a book that night at the newcomers group. If you decide you wanted to be in the program, you'll get a book. The next morning, you get up and you start working the curriculum.
Chris, the world that we live in now is a little bit different than whenever Jeff first got into his recovery program. So tell me from the administration standpoint, how you're marketing this, how you're reaching people, how you're finding funding.
Well, really, we're learning as we go. We're really learning. I'm telling you, every day. I knew nothing about any of this stuff, but I love Fuzzy. I see the passion. We have so many common things between prison and motorcycle and stuff, and so I just loved him, and I wanted to figure out a way to support him, and so I'm retired now, and I look at, well, what can I do to help Fuzzy? Well, we needed a better website. We needed all this. You know, I'm not a social media guru. I don't know that kind of stuff. But we needed a way to tell our story. And so Fuzzy says, hey, would you and your wife be interested in taking on the Abilene Gives campaign? I barely knew what Abilene Gives was. I'd given a little stuff, but I said, yes, sir. We prayed about it, and we said, yes, sir, we'll do that. And so I said, we've got to tell our story. So I learned how to shoot some videos and edit the videos. And we put together 27 videos, and we threw them up there on the thing. And it was really amazing how people started responding to that. And so then Fuzzy has always said, I just really, really want a good website. So I learned how to build a website. You've been to it. You've seen it, whatever. And I'm really very proud of it. I spent a lot of time and effort in it. But we're so young in this thing. We're just learning as we go, okay? But I just know that God continues to bless us in ways that we can't even dream up. They were like, oh, wow. I mean, Abilene Gives, we came in 15th out of 193 nonprofits our first year. That's not us. That's God. So that's why I see we're going the right direction.
Yeah.
And my goal now with being on the board and whatever is to really make aware, this whole community aware of what's out there. Because what I loved about shooting the videos was that all the people that did the interviews, when we asked them the questions, the focus and the response was not on the addiction they had, but the freedom they found from it and the new life in Christ was really, I never knew God could love me so much. See, that's what I saw. It wasn't, I stuck $200 worth of dope in my arm every day. That's not what I heard. I heard people that had this joy about them that they never knew was possible. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I wanted to get behind that. And I see, you know, my passion is the prison stuff. And so we're very involved with the prison ministry stuff. We're taking regeneration into the prisons. We're teaching Bridges to Life.
So for people that are just finding out, listening to this, what Steps Recovery is, how can they help? Like, where do y'all need help the most?
Well, first of all, the next thing is going to be the Christmas blessing bags. And so we'll have an assembly day on our website, stepsabilene.com. You can go to that. It's a full resource. We will have the announcements of all the things. If there's sign-ups for what we're going to do, we're excited about next year having two fundraisers. We're going to try to have in the spring, we're going to have a photo scavenger hunt, something that's never been done in Abilene. You're going to learn a little bit about history, see some places that you did not know existed that you've driven by and go, I never knew that was there, okay? And it's going to be family-friendly, so the kids can come along and take the pictures. And then in the fall, we're going to have a dove hunt. We had our first annual dove hunt, and this super generous couple came on there and said, hey, we're going to have a dove hunt. We want it to benefit Steps. And so y'all sent us your logo and stuff, and she put a video up, and she had breakfast for them, and the dove hunters came. And a lot of the guys that could shoot, Fuzzy and I, we're not that great a shot, but the guys that could shoot, they had their limit in an hour. It was and so this next year we plan to just blow that thing up. So again, we're just finding favor from all these places that we didn't expect. So we don't really know what it looks like a year from now, but I'm sure it's going to be pretty cool.
I appreciate y'all coming.
Well, no, thank you. Yeah. My goodness, thank you so much.
This was great. We really appreciate you doing this.
The Abilene Fire Department is investigating after a city playground, probably the most well-known playground in Abilene, was destroyed in an overnight fire. It happened in the middle of the night. And I am joined by Chesley Martin, who served on that committee for the original build of that Fort Imagination and currently chaired rebuild right after as well. That happened in 2005 when they originally built it. Beautiful one. It, for everybody, it's the one in front of the zoo out by the street. It burned down. It was a horrible fire. What was your first thoughts, Chesley?
My heart was broken. I just knowing all of the time and energy that was put into it and the love and the care from the entire community. And everyone loves that playground. And I was just broken.
2008 was when you guys restored the playground after it had, part of it had burned.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a million people going out there, and I remember the video of that many mm-hmm. people going out there mm-hmm. to volunteer. That must mm-hmm. have been quite a thing.
The whole process to be there from the first build and then the rebuild as well, you know, that part is just tremendous. It was, you know, 2,000 volunteers, 2,500 volunteers.
So some people had to come to the rescue.
Some people had to come to the rescue, absolutely. Yeah. But that was the beauty of this playground, both for the build and even more so for the rebuild, because at that point, everyone knew what the playground meant to the community.
And that's the thing about that playground. These other playgrounds were built by the city.
Right.
This one, you guys raised the funds yourself. You were with the Junior League at the time.
Yes.
And you guys raised the funds. You went all over town to raise the money. You had to raise a little bit more after it burnt down. Yeah. This was a community playground.
It truly was a community playground. It's just the whole area is great for families. And so the rebuild was a little bit easier in that everyone knew what they were getting into. They knew what to expect. They knew how hard they were going to have to work. But they also knew it was something that could be done. So,
memories.
Memories.
That's what you're talking about, is the memories that you
Absolutely.
Guys had of building that. But you know what? Almost everybody, even from Sweetwater, Ballinger, they have taken their kids to that playground.
Absolutely.
And if you're like me and you pushed your little girl on a swing, you're never going to forget pushing your little girl on a swing at that playground.
That's right.
And so those memories went up in flames as well. Chesley, thanks for coming and sharing your story with us today.
Yes, absolutely.
Officials right now are urging anyone with information regarding this fire to contact the Abilene Fire Marshal's Office, the police department. You can submit even an anonymous tip through Abilene Crime Stoppers at 676-8477. Spooky season is in full swing, and one local favorite is back to delight families with tricks, treats, and plenty of wild fun. Each year, Boo at the Zoo transforms the Abilene Zoo into a Halloween wonderland, complete with costumes, candy trails, and some unexpected animal encounters. This October, reporter Josiah Wannell stopped by to see what's new at this event and why it continues to be a can't-miss tradition.
Outdoor. year, a spooky tradition just got even better. The Abilene Zoo is experiencing one of its busiest seasons of the year. The annual Fall Festival, now held every weekend throughout October, has become a major attraction for families in the community. Combining festive fun with a strong message of wildlife education and conservation, the event draws thousands of visitors eager to engage with the animals and learn about their care.
I oversee all of the animals in the zoo, and I also oversee the keeper staff that maintain the animals. So my role is basically to make sure the animals are all doing great and that we communicate with each other to make sure events like this, that the animals are comfortable.
Robert Trejo is the general curator for the Abilene Zoo. He says that the Fall Festival marks the start of the zoo's busiest period leading into the holidays. Attendance has increased steadily over the years.
This is one of our biggest attractions, and normally we in the past we used to do it one weekend. Now we do it for the whole month of October, every weekend in October, so it does draw in quite a number of guests. Yesterday, I know we went well over 3,000.
For Trejo, each visitor is an opportunity to advance the zoo's conservation and education mission. The festival isn't simply about costumes and candy. It's a chance to spark interest and awareness about wildlife.
And that is 3,000 plus people that we can actually teach about animals and wildlife and conservation. So they don't come into the zoo. It's not just about the festivities and the candy and the costumes, the dance party and the show. But during the time we have keeper chats, we've got interactions with animals. We have our show, our Creepy Creature Show, which we highlight some of our other animals, and most people are kind of squeamish about, like snakes and lizards and tarantulas and bugs.
One key goal of the festival's education program is to create lasting impressions on its youngest visitors.
Well, I think because they get to see the animals up close and they're live. So I think that it resonates more. They can see it and even touch it at times. And I think also they're enjoying themselves, so they remember. So there's memories there. We do have a lot of kids who have, when they've come when they're young, they show interest in volunteering when they're in their teens. And we have our teen volunteer program, our zoo teens, we call it zoo teens.
Christine Brown, the zoo's education coordinator, emphasizes the unique value these live animal encounters provide compared to traditional classroom learning.
When we talk about how important it is for conservation and really taking care of the wildlife, it really speaks volumes when you actually get to see the animals up close and personal. So most of our educational programs have some sort of interaction with the animals as well, and that becomes those core memories for those kiddos and really grows those seeds of conservation and becoming animal wildlife protectors.
Brown also highlights how the community's participation supports the zoo's ongoing education efforts.
So the zoo does so many things throughout the year, and all of the proceeds and things that go to it go right back into the zoo and us being able to continue our education programs that we have. So just coming to the zoo really does help continue pushing the educational side of everything that we do here at the zoo.
I had to guess what animal I had to do. Okay. I had to guess it, and it was like a roach.
Cody Vanderpool brought his kids to the opening weekend of Boo at the Zoo. He says he longs to bring his kids for the many benefits, including education.
Being in an environment like this with education and everything, it just brings kids together and lets them explore together, work as a team in some cases when they have little projects and stuff like that. So,
from a parent's viewpoint, the event offers an extended opportunity for children to enjoy their costumes and family time during the holiday season.
My kiddos will get costumes every year, and this way you can come bring your kiddos and you get use out of that costume more than one day a year. You're going to get all of the use out of the costume if you bring them, and we have costume contests and all kinds of things. So I think it's just a really fun event to have, especially during the holidays.
With two weekends left in October, the Abilene Zoo continues to invite the community to participate, offering not just festivities, but meaningful education experiences that foster lifelong appreciation and stewardship of wildlife. I'm Josiah Winnell in Abilene.
It's time for West Texas Roots. This week on West Texas Roots, we talk to the owner of Book Therapy. It's a half-price used bookstore and licensed professional counseling all in one. Here is Don Powell to tell how these things come together to help the Abilene community.
The bookstore had been open, and then the previous owner had passed away unexpectedly. And so it was closed for about 6 months. You know, came to the bookstore and saw the sign that was for sale. And we always wanted to have a bookstore, but it's going to, you know, we're not expecting to do it right away. So it was a bit of a stretch to get it going, but, you know, we bought it. And my wife and my daughter are both therapists, and so they wanted a place to practice. I wanted a bookstore, so we have a bookstore in the front, and we have therapy offices in the back. We had bought it just before COVID hit, and that was fun. But it turned out that the city of Abilene considered us an essential service, so we were able to stay open during COVID. There wasn't that many people coming in because it had been closed for 6 months. I knew that bookstores were on their way down. You know, Barnes & Noble had just declared bankruptcy, and, you know, the small independent bookstores were dropping off. As a matter of fact, we were the only bookstore besides Books A Million for 3 years or so. But I knew that was happening, and since then, it's really come back, especially the independent bookstores. A lot of people, you know, prefer to go to those. They'll go to Barnes & Noble to walk around and look, and they'll buy some. But they enjoy the, you know, helping out the little guy kind of thing. And so we do get quite a few people back now. We didn't know anything about business, and we barely break a profit because, you know, we tell people it's half off the price of the book. Well, really, it's between $4 and $5, and hardbacks are $5. Well, half of a hardback would be $15 or $20, but we charge $5. Just like the little kids' books in the corner there, the ones you read to when they're learning, we only charge $1 for those because we want to support reading. Well, same way with the college textbooks. You know, I'd rather go to somebody who needs it for $5 and have them save some money than pay, you know, full price for, you know, $100, $200 for a book. We kind of think of it more of a community service. I have a number of favorite customers. There's a jail in the West, and every quarter they come in and they buy a ton of books. And so they're my favorite customers because they buy a lot of books. They buy new books for the inmates. And I also have others that typically they buy more, but I also have favorite customers that just are, you know, they love the book so much, you can't help but love them. Pretty much we have the first timers that have no idea what they're doing, and they'll walk around, they'll come, you know, they'll leave, and then more often than not, they'll come back. But just like when we came here, we came to the bookstore, and it was 8 months before we came back again, and by then it was closed. And so there are times like that, I'll see a customer come in, and then they won't come back in for a year. And when their time aligns, they'll come back in again. So we have a lot of customers like that. I work as a receptionist. I take them back there, get their paperwork going. And then the therapists, they're pretty much by appointment. And so my daughter's here today, and my wife comes in most days. And then we have about 6 or 7 other therapists that come in, and they just come in as needed. Growing up in Dallas, we had half-price books, which was very similar to the style of this bookstore, where very long rows of books just stacked and, you know, sorted, but, you know, not well sorted, just reasonably well sorted. And so it's very compact compared to other places like Porta Blue or 7-in-1, where they're more open. You know, we go on the side of more books. I guess I was about 20. Went to an antique bookstore in Oak Lawn in Dallas. And I was just amazed, you know, how, you know, old books. And so we have a wall there of, we call them antique books. They're 1960s or backwards. Some of them are in the 1800s, but most of them are in the 1950s and 60s. Well, I've always believed for my personal library as well as a bookstore that if you don't have something in here that offends someone, then you're doing it wrong. And so we have a wide range of books across every possible genre. So we have quite a few regulars, and a lot of the regulars tend to be older, but we have also, every year we get more from the 3 colleges. They'll find out about us and come in. And so our young adult section is fairly large. So we have some people come in and they realize, oh, I didn't realize you had these kind of books.
We recorded Don's story in Abilene. This week on Conductor's Notes with the Abilene Philharmonic, we're spotlighting the music of Leonard Bernstein. From Broadway brilliance to bold symphonic statements, Maestro David Idkin joins us to share what makes Bernstein's voice so distinct and why this concert is a landmark moment in the Philharmonic's 75th season.
This is Conductor's Notes with the Abilene Philharmonic. I'm your host, Greg Strawn. On Saturday, October 25th, the Abilene Philharmonic will continue its 75th season with the second Masterworks Concert of the Year, Leonard Bernstein, American Icon. Joining me to talk about the concert is Maestro David Itkin, music director and conductor of the Abilene Philharmonic. David, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Over the years, the orchestra has performed a number of works by great American composers. You've programmed Aaron Copland, Howard Hanson, featured Mark O'Connor as both a composer and a fiddle player. I'm sure there have been a number of works by Bernstein scattered around those concerts over the years, but this is the first time you've programmed an entire concert around the music of Leonard Bernstein. What makes his music so iconic in American musical landscape?
Well, you know, it is uniquely American and yet not uniquely American. And in the ways in which it's American are very different than, for example, Copland, you mentioned, whose music is generally considered the iconic American symphonic music. Bernstein's is American in a completely different way because he's channeling not the wide open spaces and the sort of cowboy-ish sounds of Aaron Copland, but he's channeling the more urban sounds of America. He's channeling the sounds of New York, the sounds of Broadway theater, the sounds of jazz, and then melding that into a classical tradition.
So you start the concert with Candide, which is one of his most popular pieces. If ever there was music that sparkled, this is the greatest example. I'm glad we get to hear it. But the second piece of that first half has really piqued my interest, the Jeremiah Symphony No. 1. This is by a very young composer. I think he was just 24 years old. Why did you decide to program this? What should we be listening for?
Well, the why is because we wanted to see all the sides of Leonard Bernstein. We all know the West Side Story side. Coming soon, because that's going to close the program.
Yep.
And the Candide side with which we open.
Right.
But, you know, Bernstein really spent his whole life torn as a composer because he wanted to be taken seriously. He had this cosmos-sized gift to write popular tunes in Broadway and these kinds of music like we are so familiar with in West Side Story and elsewhere. But he wanted to be thought of as more than that. And so he's constantly trying to be, I'm using air quotes your audience can't see, he's trying to be serious.
Sure.
And sometimes he was incredibly successful in writing some great music, and the Jeremiah Symphony is a great example of that.
Yeah.
When he's wants to be serious and write in a different style. And then other times he's a little bit less successful when he does. But even in the Jeremiah, it's three movements. It's a fairly short work. And the second movement really is this lively dance that is about 1 inch away from being an outtake from West Side Story. And so even in his efforts to be serious and write about a very serious subject, which is the story of Jeremiah and the Book of Lamentations, he can't help being who he is. And that's part of his charm. That's not a bad thing.
No, that's a great piece.
It is so charming that he doesn't abandon who he is.
David, thanks so much for being here and giving us your conductor's notes. David Itkin will conduct the Abilene Philharmonic in their second concert of the season, October 25th at 7:30 p.m. at the Abilene Civic Center. You can find out more information about this and how to get tickets on our website, kacu.org. I'm Greg Strawn, and you're listening to Conductor's Notes with the Abilene Philharmonic on KACU.
October is Texas Wine Month. To celebrate, the Texas Wine and Grape Growers Association hosted Grape Camp, bringing growers from across the state to Lubbock to talk about the future of the industry. KTTZ reporter Maya Shepherd attended the camp and has more.
Right now, Texas wine is facing challenges from high production cost, rising prices, and even a drop in wine consumption. Association President Julia Herbert says, despite the tough times, the industry will bounce back.
We're definitely facing headwinds right now, partially driven by the economy, but partially driven by the kind of anti-alcohol movement right now. You know, growers are having to drop grapes because wineries aren't selling as many bottles, so they're not needing as many grapes for harvest. So it's hard right now, but you know, it'll turn around.
According to Wine America's 2025 Economic Impact Study, Texas wine contributes $24 billion to the state's economy and supports more than 136,000 jobs nationwide. Herbert says, Texas wine is one of a kind.
It's a great industry. It's a lot of fun, a lot of passion, but it's still all about agriculture. And so you just have the good Texas farmer, and it
it's a livelihood and it's a way of life that's just really special.
For KTTZ, I'm Mia Shepherd.
And we leave you with some thoughts from Glenn Dromgoole.
You know, there are some things that we men just don't seem to be capable of comprehending. There's probably some kind of genetic defect that keeps us from understanding certain things, like, for example, pillows. Why does a bed need to be piled high with pillows? We men tend to think that you only need one pillow for every person who's sleeping in the bed. Well, not counting, of course, those pillows for propping up to watch TV. What's the point of all those other pillows? At night, you take them off the bed and pile them somewhere in the room, only to put them back on the bed the next morning after the bed is made. Seems kind of pointless, if you ask me. But, of course, you didn't. This is Glenn Dromgoole for the West Texas Dispatch.
Glenn is the writer of some 35 books and runs the Texas Star Trading Company with his wife. This has been the West Texas Dispatch. Thanks for tuning in. We're here each Wednesday at noon. Plan to join us and tell a friend. And if you're unable to listen Wednesdays at noon, that's okay. You can subscribe to the podcast. West Texas Dispatch is available on Apple Podcasts. You can find it on Spotify. You can also find it on that KACU mobile app. We had help this week from our team of producers, Heather Claiborne and Alexis Jones. Special thanks to JC Gamble, who wrote our theme. I'm George Levack.